Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's talk about a crazy new sport, as it was characterised half a century ago when it was first introduced to New Zealand. One that combines surfing and sailing. It would go on to become a popular pastime for thousands of Kiwis, and one in which, as a nation, we would excel on the international stage. Now the 50-year history of windsurfing and the colourful characters who shaped it as a sport in Aotearoa, New Zealand, have been captured in a new book. It's called In the Footstraps of Giants, and it's been written by former Grandmaster Windsurfing World Champion Bruce Trotter. And Bruce joins us on the line now. Kia ora to you.
Hi, Emil. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great having you here. What inspired you to write this book in the first place, Bruce?
Well, the encouragement of a lot of windsurfing friends like Gary Hill and JP Tobin, but probably more particularly the desire to record my family history while my parents are still alive, and then and also to sort of help re-establish our culture as a competitive advantage for our Olympic windfoiling team, who are finally returning to the Olympics for the first time since 2008 for the women and 2012 for the men. So,
yeah, I mean, you mentioned your family there, and the story of how windsurfing actually got introduced to New Zealand involves at least one member of your family. Your mother had a big part to play in that, Bruce.
Well, she did. I mean, there's a few characters that appear before that. A guy called Ralph Roberts. Who was one of our first sailing superstars and performed, went to the 1960 Olympics in Rome. He imported the first windsurfer into New Zealand around about 50 years ago. And then there was another character called Len de Jong, who was a Dutch immigrant, and he was what was called a sinker, working on the harbour bridge, and he helped sink the caissons into the seabed allowed them to build the piers for the Auckland Harbour Bridge. And he built the first windsurfer in New Zealand at the sort of start of 1974. Then we had a guy called John Banders, who was responsible for making the first sort of commercially produced windsurfers in New Zealand. And shortly after that, the very start of 1976, my father and a guy called Arnold Nichols, both from Warkworth, went to the Tornado World Championships on Botany Bay in Sydney. And while they were there, they saw the Dutch team trying out a windsurfer. And on the way home, my mother said to Arnold Nichols that she'd like to try windsurfing. And he said, well, I think I could build one. And that was the start of Northern Plastics out of Warkworth. And they built the Comet and the Superstar. And that was probably the start of, you know, really establishing a sort of a fun family culture, you know, sort of became everyone's weekend life for windsurfing in New Zealand. So Mum didn't come first, but she certainly had a big part in things. So that's kind of some of the very, very early pioneers.
So you didn't really have a choice. You were born into it.
Oh, and my brother Kevin, he's somewhat of a legend in New Zealand windsurfing circles. So I grew up watching these larger-than-life characters, people like Richard Honey, you know, Mike Kelly, Nick Creed. These guys were hilarious on the beach, and windsurfing was such a fun sport. And let's just sort of say that I was rather impressionable, and I was kind of born into it, and I just sort of learnt by osmosis, and I always loved the story, and I never forgot any of these people, and so these are the characters that kind of inform the book, if you know what I mean.
Was there ever a moment in your youth where, or even your adolescence, where you were like, wow, I was kind of I and all of these people who brought me into this world were really on the frontier of something that has become really, really quite big.
Yeah, I think more recently people get a sort of a stronger appreciation of just how important culture, this sense of community and sport is, and how critical it is to actually performing, you know, under pressure and at your peak. We're sort of starting to look back and realizing, you know, what we had, and even though that we were such fierce competitors with each other, it was our common love of this really cool sport that sort of, you know, bound us all together, and that in the end that was, you know, so important. And I think it maybe takes a little bit growing up and kind of getting that perspective. But, you know, for kids like me, you know, it was coming out of a small country town, I got to go and see the world and do it with some really amazing people.
Bruce, I've never actually been windsurfing, so humour me. How does it work? How do the physics of it work? It looks really physically intense.
It's one of those things, if you have a good body sense and you try not to think about it, then you do it. It's a little bit like skiing. It's kind of like point yourself down the hill and hope you don't crash. If you have a sense of the wind and where it is, it's sort of a sense of balance after that, and it can get very, very overcomplicated. Mm. But it's just one of those things you feel, I think.
Now, you, as I said in the title, went on to become a, quote, grandmaster world champion, end quote. What is that? It sounds very fancy. It sounds like you have a secret handshake, Bruce.
I feel like I'm like a chess prodigy. unfortunately, it means nothing more than I got old. But boy, what a cool title. And I should say I didn't do it in an Olympic class. I don't hand out gold medals for being old. But it was in what they call the race board class, which is kind of like where the youth and the slightly older sailors, maybe if you're the second and third best sailor in a country and you haven't qualified for the Olympics, it's kind of like what Formula 3 would be to Formula 1. And it's a fantastic class. And I went to a world championships, and Antonio Cozzolino came third in those worlds, and I came fourth. But they gave me a world title for being old, and I've showed off about it ever since.
As you
because,
should.
World titles are reasonably hard to come by. And of course, I think God knows how many Barbara Kendall's got, at least four or five, and probably Aaron McIntosh the same. But I'm proud to have one too.
Yeah. Hey, the Americans claim to be world champions of sports that only they play, Bruce.
Yes.
So, you know, I reckon you're on solid ground there. Now, I mean, you mentioned Barbara Kendall there, and a lot of people will think of Bruce and Barbara Kendall when they think of wind surfing. But you did mention that that New Zealand hasn't sent teams to the Olympics in quite some time. Is that a consequence of, you know, these maybe being the golden days for the sport and then maybe fading from popular memory for a while?
A little bit, but there's also sort of been a lack of strategic foresight or an investment into sort of the grassroots and into the ferry Olympic sailing classes that the sports organisation depends upon. So, but, you know, the internet, the Olympics themselves, there's all kinds of factors that sort of feed into that. And then, of course, one of the big ones is that windsurfing itself kind of evolved beyond itself. And that was partly to do with, you know, sort of, you know, carbon fibre and other pieces of equipment. But kite surfing came along, and then sort of later on, now wind foiling, which is kind of windsurfing on foils, and then wind wing, which is, it all gets rather confusing. But there's an enormous amount of factors why that happened. But also the 80s was the heyday of New Zealand windsurfing itself. It was a very cool summer sport.
It does strike me as a really New Zealand sport, particularly when you described the early days of it. You know, the phrase that came to mind, although it's horrifyingly cliched, is sort of very much sort of number eight wire, the early phases of it. Do you think windsurfing maybe does appeal to something in our mentality as Kiwis?
Yeah, I think that sort of pioneer spirit of having to do things by yourself, but for me, I boil it down to this idea of creativity. Mm. And even now, it's what sets New Zealand apart as being, you know, as sports people, is that we can think our way to gold medals by just knowing who we are. And even though, like you say, it's kind of cliche, it's that mentality is what will take us all the way to the Olympic podium. So that's our strength, and we should you know, harness our competitive rivalries to play to that strength.
We got about, well, just over a minute left, and we should talk about where to get the book in a second. But I think one of the things, looking at the photos of windsurfing that I see on the internet, that might stop me from, or a young person from getting involved, is it looks like it could be scary and it looks like it could be expensive. How do people start off, try it out?
Well, if you're in Auckland, go down to see Alan McIntosh at the Mad Loop Windsurfing School on Lake Pupuke. That's the very best way to start if you're in Auckland. I'm a little bit unsure about other places in the country, but, you know, go down to your local yacht club or to the beach and ask around. So that's the simplest way.
Great stuff. And the book is called In the Footsteps of Giants. Where can people grab themselves a copy, Bruce?
Best way is to email me, bruce.trotter@gmail.com. And if you can't remember that, then just go to brucetrotter.com and you'll find my email there. It's available in some selected windsurfing shops, but it's a reasonably small run. So it's not available in mainstream bookshops, unfortunately.
Oh, good. We'll check a link up on our site as well. Bruce, it's been lovely chatting to you this evening. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on the show.
That's Bruce Trotter. Bruce's book, once again, is called In the Footsteps of Giants.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.